afternoon and welcome to the Dino Herbert Show, Everyday Hero. Today's hero is a lady by the name of Keetra Oberlander. Keetra is the founder of Art of Possibility Studios, and this is an artwork licensing agency that represents physically disabled artists. Keetra is an award-winning painter who happens to be legally blind. Keetra aspires to encourage and inspire everyone to transcend expectation and be the best that they can be. Welcome to the call, Keetra.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on, Dino. It's a pleasure.
Oh, this is what a treat we're in for today. I'm very excited to have this interview with you today. I'm looking forward to it. Why don't we start at the beginning, Keetra? Tell me a little bit about your background. I understand you spent some time in the Midwest where I am. Tell me a little bit about your background.
Very nice. Well, sure. I'm a bit of a dilettante. I grew up in the Midwest in the Kansas City area, and I went to the University of Missouri. I was in marketing communications and worked as a writer and editor for a number of years. I moved to California to seek my fortune as a writer in a bigger market, and fell into San Francisco right at the heart of the dot-com movement. I rode that wave up and right back down, and have settled here. At the same time the dot-coms were collapsing, my vision started deteriorating. And as it worsened into the realm of blindness, I realized I was going to have to do something new, that what I had been doing, my former employment options and earning capacity, were going to be compromised by my disability. So I sat out the economy and was just sort of waiting to see what would happen. I was a little bored, so I signed up for some adult education classes, and one of those was a painting class. And I just loved it. I thought painting was an awful lot of fun. And then a miracle happened. Other people liked my paintings. So,
that's always a good thing.
Yeah, well, I wasn't doing it for that reason, but I found that my work connects with people and they like it. And so, pardon me, from there I needed to figure out how to get my work to market. And the logistic problems when you're blind and live in a suburban area that's sprawling and very car culture are insurmountable. So intellectual property to the rescue, I looked at the licensing model for art and decided to pursue it. During my investigation of that, I realized that if I could solve my problem, I could solve the problem for other disabled artists. And Art of Possibility Studios came from that epiphany.
Okay, that's great. Now, if I could step back just a little bit, when you were growing up, did you like art? Did you participate in art? Were you a late bloomer, as it were?
I was a late bloomer. I picked up a paintbrush when I was 40. Liked art. I'd been a collector. You know, even on a very modest income, I would set aside a small budget and buy, you know, a piece here or there at art festivals. I always sort of enjoyed adorning my world with beautiful work, but had never tried to create it myself. My creative expression had always taken a lingual form as a writer.
Tell me a little bit about your art.
I work in oil and acrylic, which is called a heavy painting technique, and I paint in layers, which is a very traditional way to do it. I'm not a big experimenter. I tend to paint close views, and I enjoy doing close views of stuff I like. So I paint flowers or boxes of chocolates or that sort of thing. I can't really see landscapes. Every now and then I'll do one just for sort of the artistic experiment of it all, but I generally stick with things that are more true to my own experience.
I know you're running a business, but do you still get the opportunity to participate in your art? I know you're an award-winning painter. Do you paint on a daily basis, a weekly basis? How often do you get
oh, that's a sad question.
Okay.
I was talking to another artist on the phone earlier today, and she said, well, you can tell I'm a true painter because I'm ready to paint and my house is now spotless. You'll do anything but sit down and work on the piece, you know. I've been very distracted by the business, particularly because the work I'm doing is so important and I'm so driven to succeed. I am representing physically disabled artists, many of whom are on, you know, disability or some sort of benefits, and they don't want to be. And if I fail those people, that would just be painful for me. So my goal, my professional goal, is to channel my creative energy into the business. I'm only painting a couple of days a week right now.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about exactly what an artwork licensing agency does.
The easiest way to explain art licensing is to really go to a character licensing model. If you own, you know, the company that makes lunchboxes, you're going to sell more lunchboxes if you put Snoopy on them than if you don't put Snoopy on them.
Right.
So you don't have permission to put Snoopy on them, so you go get permission to put Snoopy on, and that's a licensing agreement.
Understood.
And the same thing applies for art that happens with characters. So we are not set up in an agency model. I started out there, but then I just moved away from it because it didn't make as much sense for the work we're doing. We're more like a motion picture production company in that we work a full product cycle. We don't just license the art and walk away.
Okay.
We help the retailers, you know, we help the manufacturers and the retailers express the value of what we're doing so that consumers really know what they're buying when they buy an Art of Possibility product.
Okay, so you're actually more involved with the entire process than you originally planned to be.
We are more involved with the entire process, and for a couple of reasons. One is we want to be. You know what I mean? I want the companies that work with us to succeed and succeed big, and if there are resources we can bring to that success, I want to do it. I want to affirm that good deeds are good business, you know, and
okay.
good taste.
Okay.
I want people to be encouraged to integrate disabled people into their lives in an ordinary way. Right now, if you want to do something nice for, you know, the disabled, you can basically go to some fundraising dinner thing and bid on a silent auction item and eat the bad chicken dinner. And,
right.
And it's like, really? Just to do a nice thing, I have to go out of my way? I have to put on a dress just to do something nice? Can't I just do nice stuff in my life like normal?
Okay. So what you're doing is you're using those artwork pieces and bringing them mainstream, and you're helping manufacturers and retailers promote the fact that this plate with and a graphic image on it was indeed done by a handicapped person.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
Because I think people deserve to know what they're doing with their dollars, and letting consumers know that they're supporting our work directly in a non-charitable way, that we're not just a bunch of charity cases, but we have the dignity of earning a living.
And so as far as you know, are you the only one doing this? In terms of promoting handicapped artists' work.
I looked for months to find someone to represent my work in this sort of model, and it didn't exist. So
wow.
I started this business because it didn't exist. There was no one else that had put this together.
You started your business based on necessity, basically. There was a gap in the market, and you filled it. That's kind of a classic model for entrepreneurialism that you saw a need, it wasn't there, you needed something, no one was there to help you in the way you wanted to be helped, and so you started your own business. That's great.
Yeah, ultimately I'm a problem solver, and the business solves a problem on four levels. It solves a problem for the artist because it propels us out of dependency and into participation. I think the difference between participating in society and depending on it are clear to anyone. I solve a problem for the manufacturers because in a marketplace cluttered with really nice stuff, how does anyone's nice stuff stand out?
Right.
I solve a problem for retailers because they've trained consumers to wait for everything to go on sale. And so unless there's a cause orientation behind the product, people will just sit and wait. And then finally, I solve a problem for consumers. You know, people work hard for their money, and they deserve to be able to have beauty in their lives and know that the product is beautiful, not just because it looks nice, but because it does some beautiful things socially as well.
That's wonderful. I really do believe that when an entrepreneur has a really, really big vision, that's what drives the person. I don't know if you've heard about Tom Shoes, where the guy, for every pair of shoes, he donates one to third world countries. And so he's got this big vision. And I was envisioning that when you were talking about what your vision, what your goal is for your company. That's incredible.
Tremendously satisfying.
And I think people are kind. And I've been to your website and seen some of the artwork on your site, and it's good artwork. Speaking as a lay person, so it's not like I think, like you said earlier, it goes beyond charity. This is a good product that you are promoting. So it's not just doing it for the cause. I mean, you're getting
something
for your money. So that's wonderful.
Oh, and I got to say something fun about the manufacturers who we're working with now. As a business that's only 17 months old, we have 5 licensees, and the companies that are working with us are all working with us because they want to. You know,
Right. Nobody
has to do business with us. There's no business case that says we're a great company to work with. We haven't been in business long enough to do a case study on this model. The model hasn't existed previously.
Right,
so
exactly.
The companies that work with us do because they want to, and they're making some really cool things, which is really fun for me, too.
Right. And it has to be fun. I mean, otherwise, why do it?
At least 80% of the time.
Exactly right. Exactly right. You mentioned your manufacturers, and I was going to. This is going to be my next question regarding that. You mentioned plates and wallpaper and teapots. What particular industry are you focusing on with regard to the products that you're utilizing your artwork on? Or does your manufacturer have a broad enough base where they can do all of those products?
I am looking at manufacturers in different categories. We have woven products coming out through Pure Country Weavers. We have social expression stationery products, some bookmarks that are through Trends International. We've got darling little novelty pendants. They're dominoes that have been imprinted with our art and design that are little necklaces that are really fun from a company out of Texas called Phenomenos. And a couple of greeting cards that are going to be with a company called Courage Cards, which is a supporter of the Courage Center in Minneapolis. They've been around for about 50 years and have worked to help people with disabilities live independent lives. And so their card sales go as a benefit for the Courage Center.
And you're still finding time to do artwork twice a week. That's incredible.
Oh, man. Yeah, but it might be ugly. We don't know yet now, do we?
Oh, I'm sure it's great. I'm sure it's great stuff. But that's actually pretty fascinating because I was thinking you were going to have to focus on one particular industry as you get things rolling. But you're everywhere, which is great.
I am everywhere. It's, you know, it's funny because what I've done is I've shown up where business happens.
I'd like to shift gears a little bit and talk more about you and kind of how you made the shift. You know, when you encountered, I imagine it wasn't sudden, but it was something that you, that was different from you. The first 25 years of your life were certainly lived differently than they are now.
Oh, sure.
I'm an architect, and I remember when the American with Disabilities Act was enacted by Congress, how it changed a lot of things in terms of how we were designing buildings, because the government finally got the idea that, you know, we have to make sure that, you know, people with handicaps are not treated any differently.
Yeah, not barred from entry because of some
exactly
stupid
right.
logistics thing that could have been taken out in the first place. Yeah,
exactly.
It wasn't
right.
necessary. Yeah.
I had become more aware of it because I had both my sister was in an auto accident a couple years ago and is still recovering from that, and my mother was in an auto accident a few months ago, and my mother broke her leg, and she's wearing one of those halos, and my sister had her legs broken, and so, you know, we had to deal with, you know, stairs and doorways. And it's become a part of, you know, my life, whereas before I didn't give these things any thought. And so I was going to ask you, how do you function as a business owner? It's tough enough being an employee, let alone an entrepreneur, you know, you're a legally blind entrepreneur. How are you functioning on a day-to-day basis?
Well, I have technology tools at my disposal that help optimize the vision that I do have remaining. And I want to talk a little bit about blindness, because people don't know this. Legally blind is kind of like being legally married. You either are blind or not.
Okay, that's fine.
The people who are totally blind, which means they can see nothing, comprises about 10% of blindness. The other 90%, we see something. It's just not what you're seeing. For me, it's sort of like glamour shots after a heavy night of boozing or something. Super soft focus, a lot of glare. It's very hard for me. I never get a sharp image for anything. So there are certain business owner functions that are incredibly difficult for me. I can read an email okay. I can blow it up and read it. And you know, words are contextual with one another. So that, and that's also the world I come from. So that's fairly easy. Whereas doing the accounts, it's very hard because a 5 and an 8 and a 6 all look alike to me.
Yeah.
I can't tell the difference. And if it's supposed to be 58, 60, and I type 66, 50, I can't tell that I've made a typo. I just cannot see it. And there's no contextual relationship between the numbers until you get them done, unlike a misspelled word, which you can figure out what the word is if it's spelled wrong.
Right. Yeah, I can understand that. I mean, because numbers start to look alike anyway, without having a challenge like that. Okay, continue.
So that has been probably the most difficult thing is the extra time and attention. I have an assistant, and I make her read to me, or I have people double-check. And then I have been blessed with a number of subject matter experts in my world to help me. I have a rockin' really good lawyer. I have a very serene accountant. It's because he's always in balance.
That's pretty good. You need to put on your website that you do jokes too.
I did stand-up comedy for a while, actually. Fun little aside. I have an art director and production artists with whom I work. Because of the loss of color perception for me, I cannot tell the difference between green, brown, and certain shades of red and black generally. So I have an art director who can make sure that I don't, you know, click on something and inadvertently wreck it. You know, I work with really smart, great people, and if I have one bit of business advice for people thinking of starting something, it's like find people who believe what you believe, because the rest will work itself out. The people I work with are experts in their areas, and they believe what I believe. They believe that inclusion is a good thing.
It's an incredible example of what's possible. So many people are afraid of starting a business because of whatever. And here you are with your challenges, you found a way to do it. And I think
always a little too late. I got to say this: as a business owner, I generally figure out I need help about 2 weeks after I need it. You know what I mean? I'm very forgiving of that kind of stuff. Like I understand that I'm in new territory, so that I don't have performance expectations other than that long-term success. And everything is directed toward that long-term success. I'm not distracted by anything else. I'm intensely focused. And for the new business owner, the person who has that fear, you have to be able to transcend that fear. And the way to transcend the fear is not faith. Faith is not enough. You have to have enough love to press through it. You got to love your idea enough that the fear no longer matters.
You've got to love that idea enough that the fear doesn't matter. I like that.
Because the fear is there. If I waited for the fear to be gone before I did anything, I'd still be sitting on the sofa.
Exactly.
The fear goes away when you start doing the thing that it is that gets you to the next place that you didn't want to do.
Now, do you travel much? I know that the way I view artwork, there's a lot of showings and going to galleries, and so do you travel much? Do your artists have shows that you attend? What's that like?
We do. I do encourage my artists to show their show and sell their original work and build up big names for themselves in the fine art world. Some have already done that before they found me. Because my focus is licensing with the business, I travel for the big licensing expos, of course. I've got another one coming up next week in Las Vegas. And, yeah, I do travel. It's funny how much of travel is sign-based. You know, in airports and stuff, there are signs directly. And I never read any of them. I just wander around until someone pities me. It's great.
You got to do, right?
Yeah. Hey, I don't mind. And so I do travel for business regularly. In terms of fine art showing and selling, I've gotten to the point now where I'm being invited to juror for shows. And I sat on a national jury recently, and then a private collector invited me to come over and go through a rather expansive private art collection and jury it for her purposes. As a collector, which was cool. But I love fine art. I love unique human expression. I love what goes into it. I don't really like the art scene. I think it's kind of snobby sometimes, and I'm at my core a populist. I'm a gal from the Midwest who talks too much and tries to fix everybody up with everybody else. You know, that's what I am.
So you don't go around with you don't wear all black usually?
I did that in the 80s.
Okay. Well, like we talked about before, my show, Everyday Hero, is meant to inspire young entrepreneurs and those who are considering entrepreneurship. Would you talk a bit about dealing with adversity? Because I think you're probably a good person that can talk about that in terms of, you know, running a business and dealing with adversity.
I take a more Eastern philosophical approach to all of that, adversity and goodness. You know, I sort of feel like one of the things that happened for me when I lost my sight, I was tremendously frustrated. It's really kind of weird and scary. I was suffering, you know, myriad tiny injuries from tripping over things I didn't see and that sort of thing. And I had to just remove the words difficulty and ease from my daily functioning, because it doesn't really matter if it's hard or easy if you got to get it done.
Right.
So I try to stay out of that. I try to stay out of judgments, you know, and the judgments are always about me anyway. It's incredibly self-centered ultimately. It's ultimately very self-focused. So I try to eliminate the level of complaint in life, and I tried to eliminate passing judgment on everything. Now, it's one thing to discern, is this to my benefit? Does this meet my long-term goals, or is this a big fat waste of my time? All of that's absolutely reasonable. But to take a more a mature or a more elevated view of what's in front of me has been helpful. And then the other thing is, you know, because I'm trying to help disabled artists, I talk to artists all the time, and you know, there are people who have constant pain. I'm not one of them. I just can't see very well. Nothing hurts.
Right,
you know,
right.
There are people who don't have their mobility. I'm completely mobile and nimble and ambulatory and hyped up on coffee all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always running around at a frantic pace. And you know, I talk to these other people, and it breaks my heart. It's one thing to go through those frustrations, to have someone say, well, we can put you on disability, and that's when my heart broke. And when I talk to some of these artists, my heart breaks for them. And my mission is to help as many disabled artists as possible. And to do that, it means I have to craft a lean, agile, smart business that's effective with the best talent that I can possibly afford. And so I'm doing what it takes.
Yeah, well, I heard you say, it's like, okay, as a small business owner, as a new entrepreneur, I'm going to have frustrations, and so I just have to kind of deal with those. I liked what you said about difficulty and ease. Don't put judgment on it. If there's something you need to do, just do it.
We'd all like to sit around and lounge by the pool. Who wouldn't? But
right.
You know, most of us aren't situated that way. And when I lost my sight, and people would say, "Oh my God, that's so terrible," you know, now you can't, whatever. And I'm like, well, you know what?
Exactly.
Like, yeah, there are things I clearly miss out on, but in other ways, we're so incredibly blessed that I can make a list that goes just as long on either side. It only depends on what I choose to focus on.
Yeah, you focus on the good stuff.
I try to nurture the things that help me achieve the goal.
So tell me, what are your goals for the rest of this year?
By design, this business will always be home-based and have a distributed workplace, because I'm not going to make someone spend a bunch of time trying to get to an office if getting to is their problem in the first place, right? I mean,
right.
If the problem is, we have physical disabilities, so our difficulty
right.
is with the physical world. And so it's a physics problem. So if I can remove as much physics as possible, I'm going to get better productivity out of my people.
Yes.
So for that reason, we don't have high overhead. We have extremely low overhead. It's the world of intellectual property. So that's a pretty low-cost thing to manage. So we're going to stay in. The difficulty I think we and everybody else are going to have is what's happening with retail right now, and it'd be naive not to be cognizant of the difficulties retail is having. But people still need stuff, and licensing is a long-term play. They're working right now, and this is May 2009, and they're working now on the 2010 and 2011 product lines, particularly for things like calendars. Well,
right.
By 2011, you know, if only we all had a crystal ball, you know, it's not going to be this economy.
No.
So retailers need to prepare for that. Manufacturers need to prepare for that. And so there is going to be turbulence and some weirdness. It's just going to be weird. But if there's anyone who can navigate weird, it is me. I'm optimally suited for weirdness. So that shouldn't be too big an obstacle for us. It may slow us down, but we're in a rotten economy right now, and we're growing. You know, we have 6 artists, 5 licensees, about 50 SKUs, and we're coming out with, we'll have 65 by the end of the year, and I've got some things lined up for next spring already. So we're growing in this market, but, you know, we started out so small that, of course, we're going to be growing. So it's a bit of a marketing spin on that, but the truth is, the numbers are what they are, and we're showing growth.
Which is great, and it goes back to what you said in terms of what you focus on. I mean, if you focus on the fact that we're in a receding economy, then you think, okay, it's everything's horrible. I should just kind of go in and hunker down and wait till it passes over. But the truth of the matter is, you know, it really isn't anything new from where I stand. I mean,
I'm with you. I'm old enough.
They go down, and you know.
Yeah.
This will eventually get to the bottom, and we'll start going back up. That's just the way it works.
Well, and, you know, and here's the other thing. There's never a good time to start a business, particularly if you're inventing the entire thing.
Exactly right.
And there's never a bad time to do that. There's, you know, it really becomes, the timing in some ways becomes irrelevant.
I couldn't agree with you more. I did a CD recording about starting a business in a down economy, and
oh, cool.
That's one of the things that I said. I mean, I don't think there's a bad time to do it. And several of my guests that I've had on my show agree with me. I mean, it seems like more often than not, I've been talking to young entrepreneurs that several of them started their business in recessionary times. And I agree with you. If there's a need that needs to be met and no one's meeting that need, then there is no bad time to do it.
Yeah, there becomes this point of what matters, you know, and it's like, well, does timing matter? Not so much for what I'm doing. There's also, in some ways, nothing you can do to stop it if you're on the right track, and nothing you can do to propel it if you're on the wrong track.
That's a good way to put it.
these manufacturers I'm working with, I keep showing up and I keep telling people what we do, and people who want to be a part of that keep opting in. All I need to do is make them aware of the facts of what it is that we do at Art of Possibility, and how we help on these levels that I talked about, which was never the plan. It's just how it worked out.
Yes, and I think that's a lesson in salesmanship, I think. If you really believe in your product, then you will present it. You won't necessarily stress when a potential client or potential customer doesn't say yes immediately, because you truly believe in what you're doing, and so you're going to continue to promote your product, your service, because this is what you must do. I think that's great.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm doing it because it's the right thing for me to do now, and there's a need for the little engine that I'm putting in place. It's actually an honor to do the work that I'm doing. I feel honored to be doing it.
So, Keetra, as we wind down here, would you like to promote something about your products, about your services? Tell the folk how they can find out more about you, your websites, telephone numbers, where you're going to be next in the country, whatever you would like to share.
Sure. Let me direct people who have an interest in the work that we're doing to our website, which is aopstudios.com. That stands for Art of Possibility Studios, or Appliance on Porch for our southern friends. Certainly, aopstudios.com will have current information, current-ish information on what we're doing. We also have blogs and Twitters and all that cool stuff, and the links are all on the website, aopstudios.com, because it's easier to have it all in one place.
This has been a pleasure, and I'm so glad that we've had a chance to talk and find out more about you. Keetra Oberlander, the founder of Art of Possibility Studios. I wish you all the best, Keetra, and I am very impressed and inspired by the work that you're doing.
Thank you, Dino.
Thank you so much for joining me on today's episode of the Dino Herbert Show, Everyday Hero. Why don't you drop me a line and let me know what you thought about today's episode? You can also find me at dinoherbert.com for other books, recordings, and to book me to speak at your next engagement. It's always a pleasure having you here. And remember, I am passionate about people who are pursuing their potential.